From Impact Alpha, welcome to This Week in Impact, where we take you inside the world of sustainable finance and meet the agents of impact who are working towards a better future. I'm Brian Walsh. It's Thursday, April 18th. Helping me break down this week's impact investing news and insights is Impact Alpha's founder and CEO, David Bank. We'll discuss why the good economy actually is good news as impact investors adjust to new realities, how the shutdown of participant media challenges other investors to drive impact through film, and potential green shoots for development finance reform at this week's spring meetings of the World Bank. All that and more on This Week in Impact. Hi, David. How are you?
I'm just great, Brian. How are you?
Doing well. Enjoying this beautiful spring that we finally have arrived here.
Well, spring, yeah. The spring season of conferences and meetings and events is well underway. We've been all over town and out and about.
That's good news, David. And speaking of good news, Rob Brown concluded his macro impact series this week in Impact Alpha with a column arguing that good economic news is actually good news, despite what some election year conventional wisdom might have us believe. Goldman Sachs this week raised its estimate of first quarter U.S. GDP growth to 3.1% from 2.5%. Interest rate expectations have normalized, lending markets are thawing, and investor sentiment is back to positive. And the big macro trends towards sustainability, health and wellness, and inclusion continue to have durability. So, David, you've long been our resident optimist. What do you make of Rob's case that he's making here?
Well, we did want to just make the basic case, like you said, that good news is good news. Often when you get a jobs report, you know, strong jobs growth, all of a sudden it's like, oh no, the Fed must, you know, keep interest rates higher for longer and the stock market tanks. Or like you said, economic growth has been, you know, robust to say the least. The current quarter, as you say, is looking good. But last year's third quarter was like 4.9%. And the fourth quarter, I think 3.4%, both of which are kind of unheard of numbers for decades in the US. So, but then of course, when you get strong growth, everybody says again, you know, tank the stock market, because maybe it means that interest rates will stay high or what have you. So it always has confounded me that when we get the kind of results that we've been dreaming about, you know, strong job growth, relatively low inflation, although that was obviously a concern, but strong job growth, strong economic growth, strong wage growth, all of these things that are actually the products of a good, strong, healthy economy, everybody thinks it's bad news. And, you know, whether it's bad news for Biden or bad news for investors, and Rob was arguing that, you know, good news actually is good news, that there's a cycle underway that's positive for investors, and in particular for impact investors.
Right, and knock on wood that, you know, we might be coming in for the proverbial soft landing as the Fed tries to heat off a recession while bringing inflation under wraps and under control.
There was a whole kind of commentary that maybe it's not a soft landing at all, but a no landing, as growth continues to be strong. And the argument about the rebound was interesting as well, because those sustainability stocks and green stocks, ETFs, and even specific issues have taken a beating in the last year, even more so, you know, than other things. You know, there's even like been a backlash against ESG as a negative factor, which I think is a little bit overblown. But in any event, the upshot of that is that some of those stocks and some of those index funds are cheap, and as the cycle kind of gets back into gear, lending becomes easier. Some of the IRA stimulus, green bank money, and other things we've talked about on the show finally kick in, that those kinds of sectors are due for an uplift. So buy low and ride the updraft.
And as Rob noted, he kind of compared this to Goldilocks and the Goldilocks moment, and that impact investors are sitting in the baby bear's chair. And to continue the analogy, perhaps in the public equities market, the large cap companies appear to be fully valued, so they might be the papa bear's chair. But there's room for growth for smaller cap companies, and especially particularly profitable green companies, as you noted. So how do you see this kind of small cap baby bear chair Goldilocks moment playing out for impact investors?
Well, it's exactly what you say. I mean, you know, what Rob pointed out is that the large caps, like you say, have already run up, and, you know, people talk about the Magnificent Seven or what have you, but it's quite concentrated, the stock market gains at the top. But that means that the smaller cap stocks, you know, can catch up. So he was talking about a catch up moment. And then secondly, he makes the point that companies and investors have to adjust to the new realities, you know, higher interest rates and a slightly less, you know, frothy environment, or a considerably less frothy environment for sort of VC investments and other things. And so back to basics on, you know, earning good revenues and solid earnings, solid performance, solid profits. So that's not necessarily a bad thing, you know, for companies to actually, you know, be delivering, delivering on all those basics.
Okay, we'll look forward to continuing to track those stories of promising companies with good business models and stable cash flows thriving in this new stable economic environment in the digital pages of Impact Alpha. But for now, let's take a quick break. When we come back, we'll discuss the implications of the shutdown of participant media.
Every day, Impact Alpha uncovers stories that make a difference to impact investors. I am Zalaima Bibo, Chief Operating Officer at Impact Alpha, here with a special reminder. Subscribers get the award-winning brief 5 days a week and so much more. Unlock exclusive coverage, get access to subscriber-only calls and Slack channels, plus search hundreds of jobs and internships at the Impact Alpha Career Hub. What are you waiting for? Subscribe today. Learn more at impactalpha.com/subscribe.
They knew, and they let it happen. Two kids, okay? It could have been you. It could have been me. It could have been any of us. We gotta nail these scumbags. We gotta show people that nobody can get away with this. Not a priest or a cardinal or a freaking pope.
That's the actor Mark Ruffalo in the Academy Award Best Picture winning movie, Spotlight. One of over 135 films produced, financed, or co-produced by Participant Media, which shut down this week after 20 years in business. Founded in 2004 by billionaire Jeff Skoll, who made his fortune as the first president of eBay, Participant was a social impact production house known for social action initiatives that accompanied such films as The Help, Contagion, and one of the most successful documentaries in Hollywood history, An Inconvenient Truth. Participant pioneered an area of activist filmmaking, with powerful storytelling used to influence culture and enable action. As Skoll himself once put it, a good story well told can change the world. David, I was personally surprised by the news this week. After all, Participant films have earned more than $3.3 billion at the box office. What are we learning about Skoll's reasoning behind this move?
Well, I was shocked as well, and I think a lot of folks were, you know, because it has put out movies that not only are, you know, high impact movies, but it were actually just really good movies, and many of them quite successful, as you said. So so why shut it down? And I don't have any inside knowledge of that. I do think that it's important not to draw the conclusion that the social impact part of Participant was a reason why they were possibly having, you know, trouble making money in movies. I mean, lots of people have trouble making money in movies. Movies are a notoriously tough business. There's the old saw that, you know, how do you make a small fortune in movies? Start with a large fortune. And I think Jeff Skoll used to use that line when he was joking about getting into the business 20 years ago. I don't think his fortune has appreciably declined because of Participants. So I just think maybe he's rethinking his strategies. Participant has spawned, you know, a whole world of kind of social impact filmmaking, and I think that will continue because you know, it resonates with audiences. So there's a broader question, obviously, about the economics of the movie industry, but I think the economics of the impact movie industry are not necessarily called into question by this.
Now, in addition to producing movies, as you note, Participant would also launch campaigns alongside their films, partnering with nonprofits to raise both awareness and advocate for specific changes. Can you give us some of the examples of the impact that they've had over the years?
Well, yeah, you know, we are going down to the Mission Investors Exchange conference in Los Angeles in a couple weeks, and Ava DuVernay will be there, who's just put out, you know, Origin, based on the book by Isabel Wilkerson called Cass. But she had previously worked with Participant. I think there was a 2019 series about the so-called Exonerated Five, the five teenagers in New York who were convicted for this rape that they didn't commit. It's called When They See Us. And Participant, as you said, helped put together a kind of directory of local prosecutors with their prosecutorial records, which helped folks sort of track racist practices. And they did this kind of in you know, in most of their movies, some of them quite, you know, far reaching in the impact. When they did Roma, which won the Academy Award in 2018, there was a whole legislative effort in Mexico that guaranteed the rights of domestic workers with like written contracts and benefits and time off and that sort of thing. So there was, they sort of pioneered that part of it. It's both good, you know, good social action, and they have a kind of, affiliation with that. The Skoll Foundation, you know, works with a lot of social entrepreneurs, so they had their networks in that world. But it's also drums up interest in the movies and gets people activated and gives folks something to do and sort of implants that movie as kind of more of a cultural phenomenon, just as opposed to just a kind of consumer experience. So again, those kinds of things are become also kind of much more common as folks roll out documentaries and movies. But Participant really pioneered that.
And even as Participant exits, mission-driven investors are leaning into the power of film and culture as an opportunity for delivering, you know, that impact at scale. So they're going beyond grants to invest in film to drive social change. And how have we seen this model spread to other impact investors? And who do you see is going to pick up the mantle that Participant pioneered?
Well, we mentioned Ana DuVernay and this latest Project Origin, and she got funding, not grants, but investment from Ford Foundation, Emerson Collective, which is Lorraine Powell Jobs' outfit, and then MacArthur and the Robert Wood Johnson Foundation. And it was done as a loan, I think, a program-related loan, at least some part of that. There's different ways that foundations in particular can structure financing for movies. Kellogg and Lieber Foundation, I think also with Ford and Emerson, have been investors in Macro, which is Charles King's production company. They've done like Just Mercy and Fences and Judas and the Black Messiah, folks might know. So like you said, investments, and particularly these kind of quasi-philanthropic, but still investments, not grants, into movies is becoming more common, I think, as impact investors, and again, mostly perhaps foundations, but also individuals, see film as a way to actually, you know, sort of get to impact at scale. Like a cultural phenomena around a film can be way more persuasive, you know, than some kind of advocacy campaign in many cases, or other kinds of investments. So if you want, you know, the impact, and you want at least, you know, a chance of getting your money back if it's a commercial success, you know, films are not a terrible a way to go. And folks like hanging around with movie stars and directors and going Hollywood. So as Jeff Skoll did, and now he's played out that chapter of his life, and he can move on. He's probably still get invited to the parties.
Yeah, that gets to your double impact. There is, you know, having a social impact and getting invited to Hollywood movies. Not a bad deal. All right. Well, we look forward to hearing more from Ava DuVernay at the upcoming MIE conference.
Yeah, we're media partners of MIE, and Ava will be interviewed on stage by Ford's Roy Swan. And Ford, as you know, is an investor in ours as well. So we'll be all over that.
Let's take a quick break. When we come back, spring in D.C. means not just the return of cherry blossoms, but spring meetings for the World Bank and IMF. Plus, pump up the jam, because it's music with a message. Heat pumps.
I'm Erica Gonzalez, Impact Alpha's Director of Subscription Growth. Ever feel like there's so much happening it's hard to keep up? We hear you. That's why we created Impact Alpha Latin America, a monthly newsletter for impact investors who want to keep their eye on trends and investments happening in Latin America and the Caribbean. Follow the money and connect with agents of impact powering Latin America's impact economy. Visit our Instagram page at Impact Alpha and click on the link in our bio to sign up.
All right, turning to development finance, the World Bank and International Monetary Fund had their annual spring meetings in Washington, D.C. this week. As Impact Alpha reported this week, even bank critics saw signs of progress on financial systems reform, sovereign debt distress, and development finance impact transparency. Now, David, the wealth gap between the poorest countries and the wealthiest is widening. What are we learning about the World Bank and IMF's responses to these challenges?
Well, the new president of the World Bank, Ajay Banga, took over about a year ago, a little bit less than a year ago, and, you know, has ushered in what they call, I think, the evolution of the bank, and folks have high expectations for that. It's sort of a parlor game, I guess, every year in D.C. to poke at how the change, you know, the World Bank changes, you know, haven't happened. But this year there was at least grudging acknowledgement that some things are on the table and making progress. There's a sort of new focus on the vulnerable countries, particularly climate vulnerable countries. There's a gathering called the V20, the Vulnerable 20. Of course, the Vulnerable 20 actually has like 68 countries in it, but they represent something like the 20% of the world's population and only 4% of the emissions. So poor countries are both taking the biggest hit from climate while contributing the least to climate change, and have been tired of that for some time. But now there's finally some progress on things like debt repayment and suspension of debt, particularly around natural disasters or like earthquakes and typhoons and things. There's an increased effort to deploy the World Bank's guarantees. Political risk or country risk in some of these countries keeps investors out. So if you can offer ways to kind of guarantee against that, you can bring in more commercial money. So different kinds of very particular clauses and reforms that are finally getting traction and changing some of the capital flows at the bank.
And where does transparency come into all of this?
Well, that's been a one of these kind of recurring issues again. You know, everybody talks transparency except for when it comes to their own data, and there's it's fairly opaque actually to find out what a lot of the multilateral development banks and development finance institutions actually are investing in, and also kind of what kind of the rates are. There's a database called GEMS. That is kept by the development finance institutions and actually has very deep and granular data on kind of all kinds of, you know, loan transactions, and is it something that you could use to kind of establish better credit ratings and thus perhaps lower interest rates, particularly to poor countries. But it's very closely held by those development finance institutions, and there's been a years-long effort to kind of pry loose some of the data that the banks and the development finance institutions actually already have, so that other folks can look at whether the interest rates are really appropriate.
Put your data where your money is.
Put your data where your mouth is. We used to have a slogan at Impact Alpha, and that's I think the outfit is called Publish What You Fund, which is another way to put it.
All right, that's a good check-in on the state of development finance. We'll keep on following that World Bank news. But finally, this week, they heat, they cool, they're a climate-friendly alternative to gas furnaces. But ever wonder how heat pumps actually work? Well, two musicians want to tell you through a seductive ballad, I'm Your Heat Pump. Here they are now.
I'm Mike Roberts. I'm a musician and climate volunteer in Berkeley.
I'm Will Hammond Jr. I'm a recording artist, songwriter, and overall funky dude. I guess I'm the heat pump.
Yeah, you're the heat pump.
I'm the heat pump voice.
Baby, tell me what you want.
Silly moment, just came up with this idea about not only a song about heat pumps, but like a song sung by a heat pump. And like, this heat pump wants to be a part of your life and has a lot of love to give and is reaching out.
And what I want to tell you, babe, is I got the tools to hit that sweet spot every time. I want to help you.
And they would tell me, come on. Sex it up more. Make it more sexy.
Seduce us.
But this is about a heat pump, guys.
When you want it hot, I'm hot.
It heats and it cools. It's all electric. It's very efficient. Like, heat pumps are something to feel good about. It sounds silly when you say it, but like, that's really what we're trying to do. And we want to be able to connect with people emotionally and make them feel invested in the climate effort. installing a heat pump is just one really simple thing that people can do to reduce their greenhouse gas emissions.
Oh my gosh, this song blew my socks off. This is the best thing I've ever heard. I cannot stop singing it. It's a total earworm.
I'm switched on, sipping on electrons. Never gonna burn fuel, cause I prefer to keep the planet cool all day.
My name is Friday, like the day. So Friday Apolisky, and I'm the Director of Communications for the Building Decarbonization Coalition. And Mike Roberts is a volunteer ambassador for the Switches On initiative. Whatever brings you to the heat pump, whether it's the song, the desire for the perfect temperature in your home, or because you care deeply about the climate, whatever it is, I think this song can speak to those desires, to those interests, and hopefully add a layer that goes with it.
I don't have a heat pump yet, but I'm ready to convert.
It's time to get busy. Cut your gas line. I'm electric in your his ass.
Impact Alpha got a first look at the music video Rough Cut. We'll have a link to it in Monday's brief. Thanks so much for listening to This Week in Impact. David, what's the best way for people to contact us with feedback?
Anybody can reach us at podcast@impactalpha.com.
That's great. That's right. And if you liked what you heard, please subscribe to this podcast wherever you listen and share it with a friend or colleague. If you want to help out, be sure to rate us and give us a review on Apple Podcasts. Believe it or not, it really helps other people find the show. This Week in Impact is a production of Impact Alpha and part of the Impact Alpha Podcast Network, bringing you investment news for a sustainable edge. For more exclusive stories about the world of impact investing and sustainable finance, join other agents of impact by subscribing to Impact Alpha. Just go to impactalpha.com/subscribe for full access. Thanks as always to our producer extraordinaire, Isaac Silk. I'm Brian Walsh, and we'll see you next week for more Impact.